Welcome to Tastes of the Tropics. And now, here are your hosts, Gretchen Schmidt and Christina Favretto.
Welcome to Tastes of the Tropics. This is Gretchen Schmidt, Vetable South Florida.
This is Christina Favretto from the University of Miami.
Our guest today is someone very special. She's written a new cookbook that shows everyone how to celebrate Italian style, whether it's just a few friends or a wedding or anything in between. We're really honored to talk today with Lydia Bastianich and her brand new cookbook, Lydia's Celebrate Like an Italian. Benvenuta.
Grazie, con piacere.
So, first of all, I wanted to mention that we have a connection here. Christina and Lydia happen to really come from the same part of Italy here.
And being in Miami, it's a lot of kismet because, like many Cubans who are so close to Cuba, many Italians from the Istrian region would find themselves in Trieste, the closest city on the border, looking across at a land that wasn't really technically theirs anymore, or, you know, it's complicated, as they say. So, but what we do have is a memory of a wonderful cuisine of high sophistication and many influences. And at that, I'll let our wonderful Lydia Bastianich tell us about that.
Well, indeed, you know, Italy has 20 regions. The region that we are talking about is Friuli Venezia Giulia, which is in the northeastern corner of Italy. So if you're looking at the boot in the right-hand corner. And that border now was determined after World War II. Prior to that, Istria, which is now part of Croatia, which is a peninsula where you and I, our roots are, is now Croatia. But in the aftermath of the World War II, it was given to the newly formed communist Yugoslavia. And hence, a lot of the ethnic Italians, I think there was 350,000 ethnic Italians. It was a major exodus, yes. Not known a lot.
No.
Ethnic cleansing, if you will, and went back to Italy. But not only back, if they did not make it before the Iron Curtain went down, they had to literally escape and then go back to Italy. Being Italian, I guess, you know, I was small. My parents, they could have stayed in Italy, but Italy was in the aftermath, jobs and all of that. So we ended up being in the camp. I think your parents took us.
My parents were there too, yeah.
In a refugee, political refugee camp. Looking at today's world situation, you know, kind of history repeats itself in a sense. Mm-hmm. I really sense and feel at what's happening today because, you know, as a family, we spent 2 years in that camp. And then we awaited an opportunity to migrate, somebody that would take us in. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think the opportunity was Canada, was Australia, and of course, the United States. My parents, I think, really... This is, and Dwight Eisenhower was the president. This is in 1958. He opened the immigration to the United States, and we were one of the first family. We were four. I was 12. My brother was 14, and my parents. And so our trip to the United States, then that's a whole other story. But that area, food-wise, language-wise, custom-wise, has been influenced so much by the borderlines that have come and gone. You know, I mean, if you talk about, of course, Italy, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Well, I think we were, how many years? About 200-somewhat years under the
Austro-Hungarian, yeah.
Yeah, and hence, you know, in my book, you see me cooking, making strudel, making spetzels, making gnocchi di sugini, making goulash, you know, using sauerkraut very, very freely. I mean, we have sauerkraut. If there's a holiday and it says, are you Italian? Well, I say, yes, we are, but we are a borderline case. But what's beautiful about that is the diversity and, you know, different languages that go with the food. One of the big influences in that area was actually when Venice was a city-state. And Venice was a very powerful city-state that lasted from 700 to 1200 years. And it traded with the Orient. And it brought back a lot of the spices and herbs. Herbs are local, but spices especially. So if we look in our cuisine, and I'm sure your mother cooked with cloves, with cinnamon.
She did, yeah.
Yeah. Saffron, all that's not local because spices are tropical belt. They grow in the tropics, with seeds, and we are in the moderate up there. So the Venetian spice trade, black pepper especially, was a big. That's how the Serenissima actually made its its money and its power, and so we use up there a lot of black pepper, which is not indigenous. So you see how the different occupations, the different travels, the different economic kind of forces really shape a cuisine.
And I also have with me your very wonderful book, La Cucina di Lidia, which is like a Bible for me. The stories are so similar of the chicken that was really used until every bit of flavor was eked out of it, but that you could make incredibly delicious and tasty and sophisticated dishes through the use of spices and foraging. There's mushrooms. Of course, we also have truffles in Istria. A lot of people don't know about the delicious truffles.
We do. It's up in Montona, near Montona, the area, because you need a special soil for that. But yes, the cuisines were very seasonal. They still are. Very regional. So you have spring, all the budding of new things. I remember we used to go forage for asparagus, for mushrooms, for dandelion. I had an aunt who was kind of an herbalist. She made me collect all the chamomile flowers, and we used to dry it in the sun and so on. And then
to make a tea?
Yeah, chamomile tea. We didn't buy bags. There was no bags.
And you talk about quince, letting it mature in the closets.
The quince, which is, maybe not a well-known fruit here, but I loved it, and roasted or whatever. But it's tart, and it has tannin, so it ties your mouth, kind of the tannins pull, and you have to let it be mature in order to really enjoy it.
And what do you make with it?
Oh, well, to mature it first, Grandma would put it or in the grain, because we even made our own grain, and she had the kernels of the wheat, which she took to the mill to get flour periodically. But the quince or other fruits, you kind of would borrow it into the grains, and it would mature there. But also between the linen, the towels, it would mature, but it would also perfume the linen. So when you went to sleep, the quince was there someplace. I still love the aroma of quince. What do you do with it? Quince is an apple. It's a much more kind of starchier apple, intense in aroma. You boil it, just like cooked fruit. You drink the tea from it, and you eat the fruit. You bake it. It makes, a whole quince. You kind of like a baked apple. You dry it. And it's a fruit that will last. And so as it ages, last few months into summer, let's say, they'll go through the winter. It dehydrates and concentrates the sweetness and becomes ever more delicious.
I think that your book and the cuisine that you espouse also will appeal to younger readers, because it has so many of these flavors that are very are becoming known, like quince. But you also, I think there's a growing awareness of some of the herbs and spices that you talk about.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really picks up on that, Cristina, is that my daughter, Tanya Manuali, she's married now, Bastianich.
With whom you co-wrote the book.
Yes, yeah. We actually did 7 books together, and she's an art historian. She, she actually got her PhD from Oxford. in Renaissance art history. And when she decided to have a family, she was in Florence doing her dissertation, but got married. And then when she decided to grow the family, she wanted to come back close to us, me, my mother, and so on. And while she was raising the children, having, you know, a mind is a very special thing, you know, and I said, can you help me? Actually, she just automatically gravitated and does all the research, does all the, you know, so I can, the richness that you saw, Christina, maybe yes. in history and all that, that's a lot to do with Tanya and her passion for the culture in itself. So it's and she's young, you know, yeah. she has her input. She says, when she sees something, Ma, I wouldn't cook that. You know, my kids wouldn't like that. So she's a young mom.
Yeah.
And so that
yeah.
reflects in the book as well.
This cookbook in particular, celebrating, let's talk a little bit about some of the dishes here, because like any Italian cookbook, the essence of Italian is freshness
yes.
and simplicity, really and truly. I went through the recipes here, and if you're planning a party, there's nothing here that's really daunting.
Yeah.
But I love the attention that's paid to, let's say, the appetizers. I wanted to talk about stuzzichini. Okay, because there's lots of attention paid to that, and that's such a nice way we eat now, isn't
well,
it?
Because it's a great entree into entertaining. And if somebody is kind of apprehensive about, okay, what am I going to do? Pulling out an antipasto spread is the easiest, almost no cooking needed. You know, you yeah. can get all the prosciutto, the mortadella, the capocollo, big chunks of cheese, mozzarella, roasted peppers, you know, all the vegetables, the marinated vegetables, the artichokes, the olives, dry fruit, fresh fruit, nuts. And so you can see how the spread is growing. Some diversified great bread, tarallis, grissinis, all of this. And you can make a big spread, 10, 20, even for 30. You know, it's a question of quantity or how much you buy, how much space do you have to spread it. And, you know, visually you want it to be beautiful. And all you have to do is go and buy the right amounts and the right. But when you're at that level, that simplicity, the product that you buy is paramount. You have to have good product. And so, you know, to those that feel, oh my God, can I entertain? Of course you can. And an Italian antipasto, which things are, you can buy them, in advance. You spread them out. The one thing that I would say to that is that the cold cuts do oxidize quickly. So if you have a party going for 2-3 hours, what you want to do is make, let's say, 3 platters of prosciutto, 3 platters of, and you put 2 of them in the refrigerator, you put 1 out. When that one is finished, you bring the other fresh ones, especially the cold cuts. The cheese will do fine. The vegetables will do fine. But the cold cuts, you know, put a plastic wrap on top of it, put it in the refrigerator, and then you just unveil it, if you will, when that one is beginning, either disappears or gets beginning to be kind of oxidized. So, but that thought is great also for dinner. If you have a sit-down dinner of 20 people, begin with a stand-up antipasto. I do it all the time at my home. I add a little bit of salads to that. You know, I'll add octopus salad, I'll add shrimp and bean salad, which is easy. You know, shrimp, you can almost buy them but you can just cook them a minute. And cannellini bean, you can even open a can, and it's perfectly fine. You know, rinse them, you toss with a little bit of onion, voila, you got your... I love salads, cooked vegetable salad, steam some asparagus, boil some eggs, and toss a salad of
done.
So this is an appetizer. Then, if you have a sit-down, we're now progressing into a sit-down, the oven is your friend. And as far as Italian, it's either soup or baked pasta. One or the other. It's easy because you can both make them in advance to some extent, finish them the last minute, especially the baked pasta. So people sit down after the antipasto and you have your baked pasta or soup that you can put on the table. The one thing to keep in mind is if you have a table of 24 is that you divide, that you make your pasta maybe in three casseroles. So you spread them on the table, not one big one. It's because you don't have to fret then. They're not getting it at the other end. So, and it's much easier to maneuver in the oven if you have smaller casseroles in there. And then, of course, for the main course. The main course, I would say, you know, for groups is roasted or braising. Braising, you know, you can do from short ribs to a whole shoulder of lamb or veal or whatever, or roasted. And the same thing applies, you know, vegetables. Us Italians have a lot of vegetables. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those you can almost kind of smother before or make before. And again, keep in mind to divide it among the table, 2-3 platters, as well as the meat itself. And you have it spread on the table. They help themselves, and voila. Dessert, you return to the buffet. Mm-hmm. So that's been closed. Yeah. Whatever desserts you have, if you made a strudel, if you made an apple pie, a pumpkin pie. But, you know, it's not unusual for Italians to have panettone, actually, for the holidays. We always have it. The cookies, the biscotti.
Pan dolce, just sweet, simple sweet breads, but delicious.
Exactly. You put it there and let them cut as much as they like. Mm-hmm. Just put accoutrements like whipped cream, berries, chocolate sauce, and let them combine their own thing. And, you know, by then the table is clear. They can go back to the table and eat. They can socialize and eat. And your dinner party is done.
And that's why, although we're very different regionally, Italians, there's not one big hunk of Italianness as portrayed in a lot of shows and movies, but one thing that makes us that is common to Italians is these photos of these happy banquets and people looking at the camera and smiling, and they're smiling because they've just had a lot of good food served with a lot of love. And that is whether you're from Calabria or Sardegna or Istria, that's what you see in so many. I'm an archivist, so I see many, many photos of banquets. Don't you find
it is
the happy banquet?
The table is a very special place for the Italian culture, and it's where everything happens. You know, you celebrate happiness, growth, new family, arrival. You in a way, you get together when somebody passes the same way, and it's where, as Italians, that's essential for our life. You know, good food and family. And this socializing, you know, very, very social animals we are, Italians, yes. If you will, yeah. You know, gregarious. And so the table is, no wonder you see a lot of photos of families. You know.
Yeah, they're all looking at the camera, smiling because they're eating great food.
They want to capture that beautiful moment of being together at the table.
And that's celebrating as an Italian. It's really the whole package here,
yes.
Isn't it?
Well, yes, it includes all of that. The state of mind of, you know, really going at the table, but the table doesn't have to be elaborate. You can have a big pasta fagioli pot, maybe in there a few sausages, yes or no, some bread, some cheese, maybe some prosciutto before, some wine, some fruit at the end and cheese. You don't have to have an elaborate dinner for us Italian at the table, you know, so fretting that's not. What is important to Italian, that it is fresh, yes. That it is good, that it is seasonal, that it is honest food. You know, you can't kind of fool an Italian palate, if you will.
No.
And as Cristina said, yeah. You know, regionally we are quite different, but within that regionality, the philosophy is the same.
Oh, yeah. You dishonor a guest by giving them not fresh food. That's the sign of a bad hostess. My mother would. When I was growing up in the United States and I would go to dinner at a friend's house, she said, but Cristina, they might have margarine. He goes, la margarina. Yeah, which was to her the lowest of the low. You couldn't fall to sadder deaths than putting margarine on your table instead of butter or olive oil, not using olive oil.
So. But this is the essence of hospitality, too. It's the sharing of love, food and drink. And again, every culture has its own way of celebrating. But I can't think of any warmer, more festive group than Italian cooking and Italian people.
And Italians are very open, because I remember as a kid, you know, next door the neighbor was cooking something and they were eating at the table. There's always room for another person at an Italian table. Yeah. So you just pull. And so that, I think, that is natural for Italian. If somebody comes in your house, food is natural, because, you know, there was time maybe there wasn't food. So food is so special. It means, you know, you want to nurture somebody. You want their well-being. You want them when you offer them food. So, you know, the Italian really opens up, especially when it's around food. And I don't think it's, no matter how little they have, they're not afraid of sharing.
Well, we're so grateful to you for sharing a little bit of your story here today. The cookbook is Lydia's Celebrate Like an Italian. And with Cristina Favretto, this is Gretchen Schmidt of Edible South Florida. Thank you so much, Lydia. It's really been an honor and a treat here. And thanks for listening to Tastes of the Tropics.
Thank you, Cristina.
Thanks for listening to Tastes of the Tropics with Gretchen Schmidt and Cristina Favretto on Edible Radio. For more information, visit ediblecommunities.com. This podcast is a production of Edible Radio, all rights reserved.